Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts. And today it is my pleasure to have as my guest, Andre Brown. Andre M. Brown is an experienced, dynamic, empathetic facilitator and program development expert with over 30 years' experience assisting a diverse population to improve their lives. Prior to relocating to Miami in late 2019, Andre spent most of his professional career in service for the state of Rhode Island, including 8 years as a clinical training specialist for the Rhode Island Department of Children, Youth, and Families, where he created and implemented trainings in the diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging space, often serving as a mediator between conflicting opinions to encourage respectful conversations. In 2020, in response to the tragedies of Ahmaud Arbery, George Floyd, and Breonna Taylor, Andre founded Racial Just Us, a division of his agency, Jump Street Coaching, as a way to help others create actionable, meaningful racial change. Combining his expertise as a trainer and International Coaching Federation, or ICF, certified coach, he developed the Coaching for Community Anti-Racism series, a coaching and education program for Black allies that helps participants create a personalized anti-racism approach meaningful to them. As a result of its incredible flexibility, the applications of Coaching for Community have expanded beyond its anti-racism roots to be an innovative and impactful way for participants to accept and appreciate the wide range of differences in all people. Andre is incredibly passionate about affecting systematic change in the DEIB space and served as the first vice president of DEIB for the South Florida chapter of ICF, where his duties include leading local chapter efforts to positively influence the field of professional coaching, as well as presenting self-developed trainings like social impact and anti-racism perspective. He also serves as a DEIB-focused virtual coach on multiple online platforms, consulting and collaborating with clients to deeply understand their needs, then assisting to develop solutions to maneuver through often difficult situations with patience and humility. A New England Patriot fan for life, he's still waiting for Tom Brady to come out of retirement and return the team to its former glory. During the pre-chat, when I did some background research on you, I saw you were a Patriots fan. So the first question I asked is, look, I'd love to have you on the podcast, but I'm a Bills fan. Is that going to be a deal breaker? And fortunately, it wasn't. And I'm still going to plead with Bills Nation to do an intervention with the man. He thinks Brady's going to come out of retirement. He's a Patriots fan, so there's not much we can do about that. I mean, we can't change that perspective. But, man, we got to get him off of the kick that Brady's going to come out of retirement. He looks really comfortable in the broadcast booth.
Oh, boy. That's right, Dave. And well, first, thank you so much for bringing me on the podcast. And yes, I am a Patriots fan for life. We're going through some lean times, but they're temporary. We're going to be back on top before you know it.
I believe so. I mean, that franchise has had a long history of excellence, and I think it's just going to be a temporary bump in the road where they're going to be competing again for titles. And we'll be talking about the Bills and Patriots in the, in the AFC finals. So
that's right.
At some point. So I see a good future for both teams. But anyway, we are going to get right into the discussion of anti-discrimination and anti-racism training, what it is and how you conduct this type of training. So one of the things I wanted to ask you first is, can you describe the topics that are typically addressed in an anti-racism and anti-discrimination curriculum?
Sure. We cover a number of different things. One of the first is giving people an understanding of what bias is. So what implicit bias is, how that affects them. And to be honest, it affects everyone. But it's important for us to understand what those biases are so that we're able to adapt to the situation and adapt and be able to make changes that are going to be lasting and are going to have impact. We also talk about allyship and what it is to be an ally and what becoming an ally is going to do and how it's going to benefit those people that are interested in affecting change. We talk about mindfulness and being able to have a good understanding of ourselves, because it's like a big part of my program is really designed to help people gain a personal understanding of themselves first, so that they can be able to move forward and make change. We talk about circles of influence, which is, you know, the group of people or the organization. It's more the group of people that we are involved with on a daily basis. And that could be our families, our spouses, moving out to our friends, those people that we come into contact on a regular basis, and being able to understand what our spheres of influence is really important in order to understand that we can make a difference. We can do things and influence people in ways that, you know, maybe not trying to influence someone who's a stranger is not going to accomplish. So being able to identify those spheres of influence are important. We talk about what racism is and break down what racism is, what anti-racism is, as opposed to not being a racist, so to speak. You know, one of the things that I really like to do is to partner with people to help educate people who are willing to learn. If they're willing to learn and they come to the table and are open, you know, what I create is a judgment-free zone. So I'm not here to disparage anyone for their beliefs. And I've had people from a wide variety of experience levels and beliefs come to the table, you know, to talk about issues around race and racism and those types of things. And it's important that people feel that they're able to openly and freely be able to communicate what's on their mind, as opposed to having someone disparage them for their beliefs and those types of things. So that kind of just gives them, you know, like a rough general idea. But what I like to do is to really meet my people where they are. So some people, depending on their personal backgrounds, may have had experiences that are either challenging, problematic, or they've had good experiences that have helped them get to where they are. But the main thing is to meet people where they are and to help them grow from the point that they are. We can always continue to grow.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think what I hear you saying is that your first priority is to create a safe place for individuals to do some self-reflection. Dave, and that self-reflection involves, I'm sure, looking at times where they may have been either intentionally or unintentionally racist. And to own that and say, okay, I need to change that. And that can be difficult for us to take that deep dive. But I think the fact that you're willing to meet people where they're at, create that safe place for them to do that, I think is going to allow them to explore that without judgment in a judgment-free zone. Because I'm, you know, And you're right, there's always room for growth. I'm 69 years old and I'm still learning and I'm still going to commit to learning. Mm-hmm. The day that I stop learning will be the day that the good Lord has called me to another dimension. So, and I'm going to continue to do that and continue to grow. And I'm glad that you put the emphasis on that because I think we're going to build more bridges through discussion and through creating a safe place for that to occur and understanding that, yeah, there may be differences, but amongst those differences, there's also similarities. And we can't create that if we're, you know, if we're at odds with each other or we're divided and we're not communicating. So,
yeah, that's absolutely right, Dave. Absolutely right.
What are the common misconceptions about anti-racism work and how can we address them?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. And I think one of the biggest things that I've seen and heard is that if you become an anti-racist, and I'm talking from, say, a white person's perspective, if they become an anti-racist, it's going to harm them in some way. It's going to keep them from, or it's going to give advantage or give something else to people of color. And that's not true. That's not necessarily true. I mean, the way that our culture, our nation, our society is set up is that, you know, and it's been set up since day one, but the white culture is the dominant culture in this country. And so by being afraid that if I act in an anti-racist way, this is going to benefit somebody else. And as a result of that benefit, I'm going to lose what I have is completely flawed. So a lot of people, I think, who are out there look at it and think that it's going to keep them from being able to pursue this. So another thing is that if we're talking about businesses, in a lot of cases, businesses who are afraid of DEIB, and in recent years, that's become even more of an issue, because, for example, you listen to some of the politicians in the world who are basically mouthpieces for the thoughts of others in our society. In a lot of cases, they are saying that, hey, if DEIB is there, you're gonna lose out. And so with organizations, the organizations are afraid that that's going to negatively impact their business. Because, you know, as I was saying, DEIB has become a dirty word in a lot of circles. And you'll see organizations and institutions that have eliminated DEIB on their campuses, for example. And so in Florida, where I live, DEIB at the state level for state institutions has basically been eliminated because the government believes that it is negatively impacting or benefiting people of color to have that there. The belief systems have changed across the board, like having the Supreme Court strike down affirmative action and things like this have really changed the playing field in a negative way. But people feel like, oh, this is great. You know, we want to eliminate these things and eliminate these things that are seen as helpful to a certain group of people, but there's a reason why. And the reason why is because they are needed. Without these pieces in place, it becomes very difficult for people of color to be able to navigate the worlds that they're in. So those are a couple of ways that anti-racism is seen as negative. It's also seen as anti-white. You might as well say in some cases that anti-racism is anti-white if you ask certain people.
And where I'm at Utica University, DEIB is very much a part of campus life. It's very much a part of the infrastructure of our university. And I also teach at the Pratt Munson School of Art in Utica, New York. And I have students from all over the world. I have students from South Korea. I have students, I've got students from Thailand. And to me, a world without diversity and diverse perspectives is a world that is just is lacking. And I think for me, I would see DEIB as enhancing my life as opposed to being something I would be fearful of.
Absolutely.
Because the, you know, the mantra of the Teaching Journeys podcast is we're all students and teachers, so let's learn from each other. I can learn from anybody from a different ethnic background, a different racial background, a different cultural background. I've got something to learn from everybody. And one of the things that struck me, it was when I was working as an addictions counselor, one of the individuals I worked with went to a diversity conference. And the facilitator said specifically during lunch, sit with somebody from a different culture. And she said, everybody sat with individuals from their own culture. If we're going to embrace difference or understand our own biases towards difference, I'm not going to learn that sitting with another white guy. I'm going to learn that sitting with somebody from a different culture. Educate me. Tell me about your culture.
Right.
I want to understand the differences, but I also want to understand what values do we share that we can coalesce around that together we can make the world a better place. So to me, a world without diversity is a world that's grossly lacking.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, it's interesting how people in situations that are, and that's a big part of what is powerful about becoming an anti-racist and moving in that direction is that people who have not, and a couple of things, just in terms of my own upbringing, my parents were from the Deep South. They were from Jim Crow South. They were teenage parents. They, my father was like at 18, basically entered the military because of Vietnam, and he was sent to Vietnam. And after he was released or came back home, he stayed in the military. So he stayed in as a career military person. And that, the act of doing that really had a big impact on me because I ended up growing up in a very diverse setting with people from all over the world who were also in the military and different backgrounds and that type of thing. And what it did was it really helped me to become comfortable with everybody. And so by doing that, I feel very comfortable with anybody. It's rare that I feel uncomfortable. And it's generally because of some other reason. But being able to navigate back and forth and being able to communicate and appreciate and be in contact with people from different backgrounds, it really enriches your life. It really helps you to see that, you know, regardless of where people are from, typically there are a lot of things that bring us together and that make us similar. And that's what is really telling when you are able and willing to reach out to people. Generally, they are open to you and are accepting and kind and appreciate you for who you are. And so one of the things that, you know, just getting back to your example in terms of people who just stay in their own space, they're missing out. They don't necessarily know this. And they're, you know, the reasons why they're doing this could be many. Fear, lack of confidence in these types of situations. There's a lot of different things that happen, but being able to be open and brave enough to enter different spaces and develop conversations and relationships with other people, it's just really incredible how it can really enrich your life.
And a lot of times, for a lot of different reasons, Andre, people are afraid of change. They're afraid of getting out of their comfort zone. But once they do that, they most individuals who have done that have told me they realized what they were missing out on. Somebody with a different perspective is going to enrich me, because I liked what you said in the beginning about, I don't try to challenge what people, I meet them where they're at. I meet people where they're at with their belief system. And for me, it's always, what perspective is going to take from somebody else that can enhance my existing core belief system? I don't have to take everything, but there's going to be something I can take from everybody that I'm going to learn from, and that's going to help me have a different perspective on the world around me. So if we position ourselves as being willing to learn, being willing to take constructive criticism, being willing to understand, I think the world would be a better place.
Absolutely.
If we all did that. What are some ways that we can integrate anti-racism education into existing curricula and school policies?
Sure, yeah. One of the things I think that really can be helpful is restorative practices. You know, if you look at certain school departments across the country, you'll see that some of them have restorative practitioners set up, and that they work with kids. And it can be really, really effective. For example, I was working with a person whose daughter was from a different background. She was Asian, and she belonged to a predominantly white school on the West Coast. And what was happening, her daughter was, I believe, 5, so she was in kindergarten at the time, and so she was different than other, physically she looked different than the other kids. But she had kids that were bullying her because of those differences, saying, talking about her and her eyes shaped and these types of things. And so we talked about how she could approach that situation. And one of the things that came out as a result was that the school had that restorative practice in place there. And so she started to engage with the staff there, and that was helpful. I mean, there were still issues around how the school was handling the situation. And I think the thing is that it's really important, especially, if the elementary and say middle schools, is to make sure that issues of race are incorporated in some way. There's a lot of curriculum out there that do a really good job of helping schools address these issues. So like going through that approach can be really, really helpful. As kids get older, once they start to get into high school, I think it's important for them to be able to bring in elements of race and racism and difference into the classroom. Have the kids be part of developing the curriculum. Have a discussion and be open around having discussion about current events. Things should constantly happen. And there's a lot of learning opportunities in that. Schools also need to really celebrate and really support teachers that are to grow and to develop their skills around handling issues of race and the topic of race. And so it really needs to be pulled into the curriculum. And it honestly, I don't think it takes a lot. You can incorporate it in just about any class, dependent on the age of the children. So I think that involving the students, involving the teachers, parents need to be a part of the process as well. Parent, she recognized that there was an issue with her child. And so she was willing to advocate for her child and get involved in those systems that are in place to help parents be more part of the process. I think what happens, it's unfortunate, and going back to Florida where, and other states as well, it's just not Florida, but there's so much of an effort to try to eliminate these things with protecting the kids. And that's not necessarily the truth. If you're not educating kids and keeping them in the dark around certain things, that's not doing them or anybody any justice. It's just like perpetuating ignorance, and that is really disappointing across the board.
Well, and the other thing is they get older and they were asked, well, why wasn't I exposed to this information about diversity or about anti-racism? They begin to question authority, and they begin to question authority within their own home. Why was, or school, yeah. Why wasn't I exposed to this? Why am I finding this out on the fly? This is a totally different topic, but on the topic of grief. We used to think as parents, would shield our kids from death. We mm-hmm. would not talk to them about who had passed on, who had died. And we found out that that was really misguided, information that we need to be as honest with them and let them be involved in the death planning process as much as they want to be. If they say no, but at least they've been exposed to it. Yeah. And children now are pretty perceptive. I think you take a look at, with all the information on the internet, with a lot of things that they're exposed to, they pick up things pretty quickly. So to try to be anything less than honest with them is only going to, I think, hurt educators and other individuals who work with kids moving forward more than we had ever anticipated.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And I think that we as a society need to start to come out of this dark, I call it the dark ages in terms of education. Children are, as you said, perceptive, they're smart, and they're capable of more than we realize. And I think in a lot of cases, there's this effort, especially lately, of, we need to shield the kids from this, but they're seeing it. You see situations of gun violence and racism and intolerance and all of these different things that are going on. We're not keeping them away from that. They're seeing that. And so, like, if we were to address these things in a way that supports their growth as human beings, as individuals, they're going to be much better for it. They're going to be in a much better situation for it.
Yeah. And we do it in an age-appropriate way, but we do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
We like you said, we can't shield them from everything. So let's just be upfront about it and give them the information as they are able to digest it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, another question. How can we as a society create inclusive environments that foster empathy and understanding? This is a global societal effort. What do we need to do, Andre?
Basically, what we need to do is, like, first and foremost, is really take a look at our own lives. First, take a look at our lives, what's happening for us. I'm a big advocate for mindfulness and really being able to assess where we are, what's happening for us, and then taking the steps to move forward. So, if you are feeling uncomfortable about situations, or you're out in public and you're feelings about, when you're in certain situations with people or having thoughts about people, it's important to understand, like, where those thoughts are coming from and assess in yourself, like, what's happening? Why am I feeling like this? What's happening for me? How do I want to feel? And be able to move forward in that way. So really, first step is to take a look at ourselves, assess what's happening, and then recognize that, and this is where education comes in. Like, seek education that's going to help you gain an understanding of your world. So if you're in a situation where people are being mistreated, or you feel like there's an injustice being done, speak up or gain an understanding of what's happening so that you're able to affect change, especially in those situations, like, when I was talking about spheres of influence. So those people that are close to us, being able to connect with them. And if you're hearing thoughts, or you're hearing rhetoric, or you're hearing comments from them that just don't sit right, don't be afraid to talk about that with them, to engage in conversation. Well, why did you just say that? So that you're becoming more aware of your circumstances and being able to understand those people around you, those people that are closest to you.
Yeah.
We also need to look at those people who look at people who are being disparaged in some way for whatever reason and come to their support, you know, whether it's verbally, whether it's in other ways to create action so that we're not just sitting and letting that injustice happen. You know, I think about the situation, you know, recently, and I'm sure you've heard about, you know, at the debate, and former President Trump talked about the, you know, the immigrants in Springfield, Ohio, eating pets and this type of nonsense.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
That
really is, you know, like, it's doing such an injustice across the board, and it's so hurtful in a number of different ways. And obviously, I think that's the intent, is to galvanize, and that's not what's helpful in terms of creating a culture that is inclusive of others. So being open to helping people to grow as people, whether it's people that are close to us or those people that we are helping to be able to live in an equitable and inclusive environment, it's what is important.
Yeah, and I think it's to understand the difference between accurate information and misinformation. And there's a lot of that going around.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the other thing that I think is important with any curriculum, and this is for me, is the importance of critical thinking, is to look at what's being put out there about certain racial groups and ask yourself, is this true? What's the source? Where's this coming from? Is this just a meme on Facebook? Is this a meme on Instagram or X?
Yes.
You know, what is the source? And look through your own eyes to determine your own truth. Don't let anybody else determine the truth for you.
Right.
Determine it on your own and be able to discern that. And I would suspect also, as part of your goals with the anti-discrimination, anti-racial training, it's about critical thinking. It's about being able to evaluate what are reputable sources of information about certain cultural groups and what are not reputable, and then making the decision for yourself, and also taking a dive in to talk with somebody, for individuals from those groups, to see exactly what's truth and what isn't truth.
100%. I agree with you 100%.
What are some resources that you could suggest for individuals to continue their own anti-racism learning journey? Any books, any other good legitimate websites that you could suggest?
Sure. There's a number of different resources out there. And let me pull up I had a list. Let me just pull it up. There's a site, and I can give you this information so that you can put it in your show notes, but
yep.
There's a resource called racialequitytools.org, and they're an amazing organization, because they provide a lot of great resources around definitions and different ways that people can become active in racial equity. There's just so much information there on it. There's also, I'm a big podcast fan. And so a big part of what I do is I like to help educate people, and people learn in different ways. And so there are books, there are podcasts. So in terms of the podcast that I like to listen to, one that I feel is really, really great, it's called Pod Save the People. And that podcast basically talks about issues around racial justice or injustice, things that you wouldn't even necessarily recognize that are happening, that, you know, like it covers every perspective from politics to sports to entertainment to you name it. It's an incredible podcast. So it's a must listen every week. So Pod Save the People is one that I recommend. In terms of anti-racism, Ibram X. Kendi is a professor that wrote the book, How to Be an Anti-Racist. And so Ibram X. Kendi has been involved in a lot of different things. And now he's, you know, like as an educator, he's involved in academics, but his work really helps to shape, and that book really helps show how he came from being, you know, like someone who was just, you know, a person who grew up in Brooklyn, to someone who really looks at race and gains an understanding that as an anti-racist, the important thing is to create action. It's about doing something that's going to act on something that's going to affect change, as opposed to just saying, "Oh, I'm not racist." It's not enough to say that you're not racist, because the way our society is set up, if you're just living in that space, you're not actively looking to eliminate racism. And that's what anti-racism is about taking active steps, whether it's engaging people in conversation, whether it's, you know, writing books, however you decide that you want to do it. You can, there's a lot of different creative ways that you can become anti-racist. And so those are a few resources. There's a couple of others too, but like I said, I'll give you some resources to share with listeners so that they can get into this process. And in addition, obviously, my program and the Coaching for Community program is designed to help people create their own anti-racist action plan so that they can gain an understanding of how race negatively impacts our society, and that it's so systemic, that it's across the board. Through my work, what I try to do is to help people to create change from their perspective and on their terms based on what they bring to the table.
Thank you. It sounds like you have a plethora of resources. I'll make sure all of that gets in the program notes with any links that you send me and any other resources. I'll make sure that's in there for our listeners. So if there's one thing you want to leave our listeners with today, Andre, what would that be?
I think the biggest thing is that anyone can make an impact, can make a positive impact on their world. So if you decide that you want to make a positive impact around issues of race or around anything, really, you can do it by taking those steps, like taking steps that help move the ball forward.
Some wise advice and practical advice as well, too, and something that's easily attainable.
Absolutely.
My last question for you. Listeners want to get in touch with you, find out more about your services, or if they just want to do a Brady intervention with you, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Well, aside from talking Tom back into a uniform, they can reach me at Jump Street Coaching, and Jump Street is one word, JumpStreet, coaching, coaching.com. So coach at jumpstreetcoaching.com. They can also reach out to me on LinkedIn, through LinkedIn. I love to have connections with people through LinkedIn. And I think those two are the best ways. Oh, and my website. I'm at jumpstreetcoaching.com.
And all of that will be in the program notes as well. And I would be remiss before we sign off today not to draw attention to your Hawaiian-themed Patriots shirt. I had promised Andre I was going to wear my Bills shirt, and I totally forgot. And but the next time, if we do a return engagement, I'll make sure I have my Bills shirt on the next time.
Okay. Duly noted.
Even if before we record again, I'll make sure that I have that Bills shirt on if I forget.
Okay.
So. But with that, thank you so much, Andre, for being a valuable guest contributor today on the podcast. I so enjoyed our conversation, and thank you for sharing your wisdom with us about anti-racism and anti-discrimination programs today.
Thank you, Dave. I appreciate you inviting me on the show. I had a great time.
Me too. And with that, that is a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.
Peace.